You're listening to KGNU Community Radio. This is Poco and Boco, people of color in Boulder County. I'm your host, Nikhil Mankekog.
And I'm Tracy Jones. Today we are with Tolu Wanimi, a local poet and artist and activist here recently from Boulder.
Indeed. Hello. It's nice to be here.
So could you tell us a little bit about your experience when you lived in Boulder and what you found it to be as a person of color?
Yeah, I feel like my experience is a little interesting, but also very much like many of the people of color in Boulder, because I went to college at CU Boulder. Mm-hmm. And so my experience was both the city itself and also the campus, which, while they're essentially one and the same, the campus is also its own universe. I guess coming in, it wasn't just, you know, being a person of color in Boulder. I was a person of color in Boulder who was also an African, who was also an immigrant, who was studying engineering and also trying to do art and really make sure that the message and the passion behind my art was being recognized. So I faced many challenges that, like, I kind of, like, compartmentalized in my memory. For instance, like, just as a student, being represented on campus is not generally something that I see around a lot, unless it's in the brochures. And funny enough, I'm about to be in one of the CU Boulder brochures. So I really hope that the story and the narrative of the school is still being accurately told. But being in the engineering class, of course, many times I did not see faces like mine, except in the, you know, 1,500 or whatever person math classes. So representation was, it was not apparent, not evident, really. And so I really found myself in classrooms where the teachers either ignored me completely, or on certain issues or in certain questions, they would turn to me as some sort of expert to represent all Black people or all African people. And so that definitely put me in a really weird and uncomfortable situation.
That's interesting. I mean, so you've been involved even at CU, while a lot has been happening around diversity and inclusion is a hot topic, people raising the issue and then looking at the administration's response to it. They've had a campus climate study came out and they're supposed to be addressing that. I mean, how do you feel about the diversity and inclusion efforts beyond just, you know, putting you in a brochure for the campus? How do you, you know, what's, tell us a little bit about what's going on with that from the student perspective, a student of color.
Well, they actually invited me to give my opinion on what the diversity and inclusion climate was like on campus. I spoke at both of the diversity summits in 2016 and in 2017. This year, or actually, yeah, 2016 and 2015, I spoke at the diversity and inclusion summits. And I had to be brutally honest with them because of their research methods, how they marketed the campus climate survey, how they interpreted the results. There were also many campus climate meetings that went on around campus. And if you were to go to any of these meetings, there were like very few people there because, one, it wasn't very advertised and students weren't generally like really encouraged to go to that as something that would be important to their student experience. So I think while the administration is making very public and also for the most part well-intentioned steps towards really gauging what the climate is on campus for inclusion, I feel like there's a bit of fear behind taking a very direct stance and saying, hey, inclusion and diversity is something that we struggle with here on campus, and starting from there and making that the message and saying, students tell us how we can improve, as opposed to coming from a standpoint where we're like, oh, we have always stood for diversity. Let us, you know, do a campus climate survey and talk about, you know, how safe students feel on campus and how we've already reached that hypothesis without actually surveying the students.
If, in a magical world, Tolu could run CU's diversity program, hypothetically speaking, what do you think would be an effective method of getting students involved and having them to realize that their input is essential to not only themselves, but future students?
I definitely think it has so much to do with language and branding and how they put the message out there. Because many times the administration, because it is still a public school, and so they still do, you know, on some level get federal funding, it's harder for them to take what they call a political stance. Mm-hmm. But rebranding and changing the language to say, this isn't just about politics. Mm-hmm. This is about student safety. Mm-hmm. And really putting people in charge of that initiative who are, one, close to student demographics, close mm-hmm. to the demographics of students who have brought up safety concerns, students who have felt that they don't feel included on the campus, having them lead that initiative, and also changing the way we talk about diversity and even changing the way we define diversity, because many times it's kind of like a buzzword that we throw out there. And mm-hmm. it's like, yes, diversity, but what does that actually mean? Diversity, it's almost a redundant word, because that's just what everything is. Everything is diverse. Life, nature, you have to put diversity into context, mm-hmm. talking about, you know, things like social structure, putting very intentional language that many people find may, you know, it may ruffle a few feathers. Mm-hmm. Also making sure that people understand this is something that goes beyond politics.
So you mentioned your art form, and that is spoken word, correct?
Indeed, indeed.
Do you have anything you would like to share with us in the form of spoken word?
I could definitely share a poem for you all. I was just at a meeting doing a keynote speech for the Colorado Language Arts Society. And so this is a poem that I did for them that I had written actually for a diversity and inclusion summit. And the theme of the summit was I am because we are. The language and the concept behind the African, you know, proverb Ubuntu. And while that was a great effort, I feel like there was a lot that was blanketed over and not really understanding that I am because we are is also we are because I am. So your school is just as much its loudest and most vocal and most visible students as it is the students who are underrepresented and the students who are the only ones who look like them in the classroom. So this poem is called We Are Because I Am. This is for the students in the front of the room 10 minutes before class wearing everything they have to prove on their skin. For the ones in the back with the 15-minute late stride sweat from running for an hour late bus, for the ones with 3 jobs and no scholarships, fighting to honor parents whom America has turned into shadows, the black fish without expensive lives or trust fund voices, the ones the institution will put on their brochures, then grind into silent pavement after, the ones who are followed home, mistaken and mistreated as campus workers, the last ones to leave the library, the first to have their work questioned. Double consciousness got us scrubbing the accents and ebonics from our tongues. MLK visions more jail cell Birmingham burning than I have a dream for the ones who find home in every hijab, head nod, dap up, Spanglish whisper across the hall, clutching our traditions close beneath football jerseys, while our cultures are worn as costumes year after year, our bodies washed white, then displayed so clean for demographic reports. Diversity has become a gavel of a word, smacked down for extra funding. But we are more than numbers. We are more than what some say our hands are good for. Our hands know what it means to keep reaching even past those who see your breath as nuisance, desperate to live like a human ladder towards heaven, a hope for those who died with fingers still inching towards the sky. I know I am my grandmother's dream come true because I am alive, because I am here, because we are here. This heartbeat is a collective effort. I am because Asata. I am because Lalo, Malcolm, Amadou Diallo, Tamir Rice, Renisha McBride, Philando Castile, Rakia Boyd, Emmett Till, Sarah Bartman. I am because the history of this country is a steel fiber I rip from my throat to breathe. Every morning I breathe in a classroom that would rather me be invisible. I am visible on a campus with a privileged crowbar, and I have not succumbed to the beatings. I am every brown body having to defend themselves in a history lecture. I am every ignored upraised hand in the STEM field that refuses to give up. And ain't that a miracle? Ain't that something to sing about? Our ancestors proudly rising through us, a cavalcade against the backdrop of the Flatirons. Ain't that the relentless love poem of the century? We are because I am.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Whoa.
You.
Sorry.
Man, powerful.
Amazing.
Well, you're listening to Poco and Boco on KGNU Community Radio. I am your host, Nikhil Mankekar.
And I'm Tracy Jones, your co-host.
And our guest is Tulu Wanimi, a poet, local poet, activist. And Tulu, I wanted to ask you, nowadays it seems that hip-hop is getting more respect and in some ways is being recognized as a legitimate art form in a way by people who may not have taken it that way before. But the poetry in hip-hop. And I wanted to know what you think about coming from the poetry community and slam poetry, what you think of that and how that is affecting, you know, people coming to slam poetry events, and also if the communities both get along.
I feel like absolutely they get along because they are one and the same and they come from each other. Hip hop has been on the journey of, it has always been a legitimate art form, but it has always been on this journey, not of seeking approval by the mainstream, but the mainstream has generally more and more, become accepting of it. And I also, always want to distinguish the difference between hip-hop and rap, because hip-hop as an art form has tenets and it has, you know, certain belief systems that it follows, whereas rap is more of the commercial side of that and what people mainly hear on mainstream radio. And all hip-hop artists are poets. Not all poets are hip-hop artists. There are many forms of poetry. Some poets prefer narrative over rhyme, over, you know, certain cadence and flow, but all hip-hop is poetry. And I can't generally speak for entire communities, but I definitely always associate hip-hop and poetry as being like one of the catalysts for my love for my own art form. And whenever I teach in schools, I also incorporate or try to incorporate like knowledge of hip hop and using hip hop as examples that are relatable to people of all ages when talking about poetry.
Excellent. And you were also in 2015 named Denver's first youth poet laureate. Talk about, that's a big deal, and congratulations on that.
Thank you.
Talk a little bit about what that experience was like and if, you know, what came along with that.
I was the Youth Poet Laureate from 2015 to 2016, and being the first one, there were a lot of rules and guidelines that were still being developed, and so it was kind of like a learning experience for everyone involved. It was really my first taste at seeing poetry as a full-on career. I was able to figure out, okay, these are all of the things that I can do with poetry. I was doing, and I still am, from that experience and from being able to build my own name, my own brand, working on, you know, all of the books that I have been working on and projects and touring, have all stemmed from my experience as the Youth Poet Laureate, but I was able to do speaking engagements, was able to teach, I was able to do collaborative projects with different artists, I was able to bridge mediums, I did art gallery shows, and so I was able to see the full spectrum of what, you know, living and existing and making capital as an artist, what that looked like. It was really incredible. The difference now is that as the Youth Poet Laureate, many times, because of the city-appointed official position, I felt like I needed to be censored, and in many ways I was censored. However, I feel that now as the program is developing, there is more of an understanding that like art is not something that should be censored. So now as an artist acting independently of, you know, Youth Poet Laureate, even though I'm so thankful and grateful and that will always be part of my history, mm-hmm. As an independent artist, I'm able to say, okay, now I get to do all the things that I did as Youth Poet Laureate, but completely and 100% as me.
And even locally in Boulder, we have a pretty strong poetry scene, like through Naropa and you know, that kind of beat generation, like Jack Kerouac's school of disembodied poetics. That's the channel through which, and Allen Ginsberg and stuff, is kind of laying some of the history of poetry in Boulder. I mean, how do you interact with that? I mean, it seems like you're very involved and obviously well-recognized in Denver, and yet Boulder is your community. You're a student here, and you contribute so much to that campus and in poetry. In what ways do you tie into the Boulder poetry community?
Well, I was at CU Boulder for the past 5 years. I graduated in May, but throughout, for the past like year or so, I've been hosting the Innisfree open mics on Tuesday nights. There's a new host now. Yeah. So Innisfree is off of, I believe, Broadway in Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. It's most people know it as the Buchanan's Coffee mm-hmm. Building. Mm-hmm. They're owned by the same amazing person, Brian Buckley. It's really great. Please check out Innisfree. So every Tuesday night at 7 p.m., there's an open mic there, and mm-hmm. it's mostly poets. And so we just come together, people sign up, and they get up and read their poetry. Mm-hmm. And it's a great interactive experience. So I've been doing that for the past year. And when there was this competition called it still goes on, it just isn't in Boulder, but the College Union's Poetry Slam Invitational mm-hmm. Came to CU Boulder in 2014, and I helped organize the efforts that were on the campus and volunteered for that, which was really, really an incredible experience and really like showed me, because there were so many students from the Boulder campus who wanted to be part of the CU Boulder team and who had done the CU Slam each year. And it was really great. I did the CU Slam about 3 years in a row. I won each year. And then last year I hosted the CU Slam. So CU Slam is also another amazing poetry program. So Boulder is full of poetry, and I've been trying to get involved in as much of it as possible. I also did the Jaipur Literary Festival last year. I was on one of the panels for that too.
Well, Toluwami, thank you so much for coming to join us on Poco and
Thank
Boco. We really appreciate
me.
It.
Absolutely.
And Tolu, I just before we go, I know Innisfree is actually one of the only all poetry bookshops in the country.
Yeah.
And I just wanted, I know you've written two books now.
Mm-hmm.
And are those available?
Yes, they are. Right now, my books are all sold out at Innisfree, but they should be restocked in the next few weeks.
What is the name of your books, please?
So the name of the first book I put out is called Omi Ebimi, which means my family's water in Yoruba, which is my native tongue. Those books should be available in a couple weeks. And then I was published by Penmanship Books with a poetry book called How to Become a Lightning Storm. Nice. So those are my two books.
Thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you for having me.
And thank you for sharing your poem with us.
Absolutely.
You're listening to KGNU Community Radio. This is Poco and Boco. I am your host, Nikhil Mankekar.
And I am your co-host, Tracy Jones. We look forward to hearing from you and you joining us again soon.
Thank you for listening.